Hey guys, the show is about ready to start, but really quick, I wanted to grab your attention, tell you to have a pencil and paper ready. I have some very important information you're going to want to stick around for after the show regarding updated contact information, websites, and more. Everything's changed. Holy cow. What do I mean? Everything's ready to start. I gotta run. Stick around after the show and I'll get you filled in.
Welcome to this podcast. Get ready. Here we go.
GOST Radio proudly presents Random Illusions, the podcast where the occult community goes for its listening pleasure. I'm your host, Shasta Ray. Grab a cup of coffee, grab a cup of tea, or grab a glass of wine at the end of a long day if that's what you want to do. Kick back, settle in, and hang out with me for just a little bit while we chat it up about magic. Good evening! Welcome to Season 2, Episode 34. Wow, that's a lot of episodes. I'm your host, Shasta Ray, and I am joined in the virtual studio tonight by everybody's favorite occultist, the acoustic alchemist, the musical mystic, my wingman, Tim Cheesebrow. Say hi to the listeners, Tim.
Good evening.
You're sounding kind of creepy tonight.
Channeling the count.
Oh, have you been counting?
I mean, yeah, I got kids under five, so we're counting all day.
That's awesome. So, I don't know. I thought we would just kind of keep it casual and informative tonight. And one thing I realized,
our formal and, you know, like black tie affair we usually do.
Well, yeah, I mean, usually you're in a tux and now you're in a bonfire. So
at a bonfire, not.
Oh,
very different, especially if you're in Salem, circa 16-something-something.
Well, I mean, I guess it does kind of lead into what we are going to talk about a little bit. So, you know, people know us and they know that we're on the airwaves and we're trying to help people find their way and find information that might help them with their spiritual journey and stuff. And I don't think I've given the basics on some of my magical history. Nobody really knows your magical history. I do, because I talk to you all the time and you're my business partner and my podcast co-host, but you kind of keep kind of quiet about some of your levels of expertise. And that's why I like having you on the podcast, is you make it a great place to be. So how did you get started on your spiritual journey? Tell us a little bit about your timeline.
Holy cow. Well, there's a lot going on. I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. But back in the youthful days, I was kind of, I don't know how to say it. I mean, I played in the church band for a number of years. We were Catholic. And then I went and joined Young Life, which is an evangelical free youth group. Went to several camps. And, you know, I was the kind of kid who did Bible camp some days and then went and played guitar and smoked pot other days. So there was a little bit of a dichotomy there. But actually, what ended up having me leave the youth group was when I showed up for one of their Bible studies, and the topic of the day was on how homosexuality is bad and everyone who is homosexual should be punished and why. And I'm like, oh, I'm checking out now. Punch my card, I'm done. And then, you know, I kind of was stuck in the Catholic thing for a long time because, you know, it's hard to get away from whatever you've grown up with. And my folks were really involved in the church. And I was at a job where I was doing a lot of work for the church, doing demographic analyses, doing some consulting. And one of the big messes we were trying to unravel up here at the time was our archdiocese was going through a huge scandal with pedophilia. And our company was hired to be the people that helped them figure out how to navigate all of that.
Wow.
So again, I didn't feel great working for them, kind of seeing how the sausage was made, you know. And I got another peek behind the curtain It was actually prior to that experience, I had gone to a Catholic college, and that college is actually the largest monastery on the North American continent. It was Benedictine, and I ended up kind of internalizing a lot of Benedictine values at that time. And even though it was college, I was still a fairly spiritual person. Never quite felt at home, but was still trying to find my way. Then I woke up after a particularly late party to a phone call from a guy named Brother Henry down in New Orleans. And he's like, "Hey, I heard that you'd be a great candidate for a teacher. Why don't you, if you want to, come down, live with us here at the monastery next year, and you can teach at our school. And would that be something you'd be interested in?" And I was like, "Yeah, man. I mean, like, I don't have anything going on next year, so all right." And that's how I got locked into living at a monastery.
That's funny.
So I kind of spent the summer going around Europe and visiting all these awesome churches and other spiritual areas and kind of doing some of my own on-the-ground research at, you know, the primary locations, because when they're right there, that's what you got to do.
Right.
So then got back, spent a year down in this monastery. You know, I never took vows. I was part of a volunteer corps, and we lived at the monastery, and we had to act as though we had taken vows because it was a boarding school and there were students there, and the students had to see us in the same light they saw the brothers.
Right.
And so we had to keep up appearances even if we didn't take the vows, but it really gave me a sense for what life would be like had I taken them. And I was seriously considering it at the time, but then, you know, I met a girl, which is incompatible with Catholicism to their detriment, man. I mean, that is one outmoded piece of theology that has been an Achilles heel for that organization for thousands of years now. Imagine how many priests they might have if they just allowed them to marry and have sex like normal people.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyways, so met this incredible woman, and she's now my wife. And I actually ended up getting in really big trouble with the brothers because I used to sneak out at night and moonlight as a catering server so that I could make some extra money to buy a plane ticket so that I could go surprise this girl to see her senior art show.
Wow. Because
I know she put so much work into it. And the week that I had to go up there to go see her, that was the week that we were supposed to have some big old ceremony with the monastery. And I'm like, well, sorry, guys, peace out. And they were totally pissed. But I was like, hey, you can be pissed. That's fine. I'm going to marry this girl. So that's my priority. I'm sorry.
You made a good choice.
I did. I'm confident in my choice. And once I said that, they were actually like, hey, we get it. You know, if you're that sure, like, love is love. I'm not going to stand in the way.
Well, you know, and on a selfish end of things, myself and the entire world gets dad jokes piped into them every time you're on the podcast now. So,
lucky,
I mean, dad jokes. It's the gift that keeps on giving, you know?
Really is.
Where did things go from there after you fell in love?
Well, that's where we got to a point where we had to figure out how we're going to do this as a family. And she was Lutheran, like we're talking, she was preparing to go into the pastorhood, and I came from a Catholic family. So there's already some friction there, not with us, but the families. And we decided to both say screw it and become Unitarian Universalist. And we had our wedding in a barn. We had all of our kids dedicated at a UU church. And we're like, nope, 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 neutral ground from now on.
That's awesome.
So, and I love the UUs. I mean, UUs are great. They are so thoughtful and so caring and so welcoming. And I love everything about their ethos. Where they fall short is action, power, determination. It's not a religion that empowers. Like it's a religion that seeks to give everybody an equal seat at the table, which I respect. But individually, I wasn't juiced by it. You know, I wasn't excited about it. It was aligned with my values, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't get me out of bed in the morning.
Right.
So as a seeker of truth, I kept on seeking. I ended up reading like all of Bart Ehrman's books. I was really into him for a while, trying to uncover the historicity of Christianity and seeing if there was a place for me there, and finding that there really wasn't.
That is so weird. I'll mention that later. Don't let me forget to comment on Bart.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fabulous author.
He's incredible. Wouldn't he be cool to have on the podcast?
Yeah. Hey, Bart, get your booty down here.
I wonder if I emailed him and said, I'm on his blog. He is such an interesting individual, and I don't even go read or listen to him like I would love to. And he charges $25 a year for his blog. 100% of it goes to the homeless.
See, he's the man. I love that guy.
Yeah, and you get all of his material. I think you get a certain amount of questions, which I've never used. And then it gives you early access to his presentations and stuff, which I've never taken advantage of. But it's $25 and it all goes to the homeless. So, hey, why not? You get content and you help someone. Continue about your path.
Well, he talks the talk and walks the walk. I really admire Bert Ehrman, and his work changed my life because I then started understanding the historical path of the Jewish and Christian people. I started that was my first foray into comparative religiosity, and that sparked a little fire. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I'm going to dig in now. Had a little period where I was very staunchly atheist, mostly because, like other atheists, I was angry at the divine for allowing the degree of suffering that was allowed. And I couldn't fathom what positive purpose it could possibly have that would justify things like war, famine, rape. But yet they exist. And it's that classic problem. If God is all powerful and all good, then these things shouldn't exist.
Right.
Which means because they exist, God is either not all powerful or not all good. And that logic worked with me for a very long time until I kind of realized that reality is more of a rainbow, less of a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
And so I started seeking elsewhere. And that's when I want to say 6-7 years ago, maybe. And I fell into working with runes and learning that language. And then just my love of languages brought me from that to different types of magical scripts like Theban and Malachim and Celestial. And I learned how to read and write all those things. So I learned the language before I learned how to apply it, just because I thought it was interesting. But then I got into the material and found out, hey, I'm actually pretty good at reading runes. I'm actually pretty good at doing readings for people. And I started then, you know, people said, hey, you should contact this spirit and that spirit. And I'm going, I don't know how to do that. Teach me how to do that. So folks online basically coached me through the process. I started getting books like everybody does. I've got, you know, this crazy ass library now. And then I started taking classes in, you know, different forms of magic from different cultures, and really dug into Kabbalah, ended up spending some time learning how to read Hebrew. And then I started applying my own designs to the stuff I was trying to do and found out it worked so much better. And I started taking stuff from the classes that I was learning and kind of modifying them for my own, the way I think about things. And doors just started opening up. And it was, I mean, it really was a magical transformation.
That's awesome.
I felt like I had agency for the first time. I felt like I had some control over my life, and I felt like the choices that I made mattered. And I also came to understand a larger picture wherein suffering is part of the game.
Yeah.
And now that I get it, I get it. And I'm not angry anymore about that. I understand the need for balance, and I feel like learning alchemy and magic has just helped me grow as a person significantly. I have grown more in the last 6-7 years with this stuff than I did with the previous 30 years of churching.
I agree.
Yeah, there was a brief period where I also kind of studied more folky type witchcraft, and that was also interwoven with my love of folk tales. I've got a whole library of folk tales from around the world, And I use them to write songs because they're, you know, they're archetypal. They're inspiring. They say something about the human condition. And I really, really love mythology and folklore. And a lot of stuff from witchcraft is based on that or vice versa. And so I tried that for a while. Now, I'm not going to knock anybody who practices that because it's a perfectly valid path. It's a lot of fun. I enjoyed my time there. It wasn't my flavor, you know? Yep. So I didn't stay there very long, but I stayed there long enough to understand how it worked. You know, living in New Orleans, I did pick up a little bit on voodoo and different conjure practices. When I was over in Egypt, I learned a bit about their magic. So I'm really kind of a collector of different things, and I check them out and I see if they work for me. And if they do, I keep them. And if they don't, I move on.
Well, the funny thing is you're passing this off as you kind of learned a little bit, but from conversations we've had privately, you are actually quite knowledgeable in kind of a lot of basic witchcraft. And I'm not saying Wicca, it's like actual root witchcraft type concepts. And you kind of blew my mind with some stuff you knew. I was like, whoa, when did you learn this stuff? And, it's funny because I have some similarities. There's parallels. I think that's real common. I think people dabble and they try to find their own path and everything. But
I don't half-ass anything. I whole-ass everything.
Yeah, you do. But yeah, I mean, for the sake of like the nature of that conversation was nothing to do with today's presentation. But Tim and I were having a conversation about some magic concepts and he starts going off about all of this witch knowledge and how to structure certain stuff and the symbolism of this and that when he is putting something together. And I'm like, wait a minute, where did you learn this? Because this isn't occult magic. And you told me about the witchcraft stuff. And I'm like, whoa, because I dabbled in it too. But not a lot of people even know some of the stuff that you know. So that was cool.
That's one of the things that I would actually suggest for anybody who's a seeker is, whenever you approach a new ideology or you approach a new thing, be ultimately curious, ask all the questions, even if they seem dumb, and never clue anyone in on how much you know. I have learned a whole lot of stuff just by playing dumb. And then it has the double effect of those who decide to get on your bad side later will sorely misunderstimate you.
Yeah, yeah. I've had that happen.
Not misunderestimate. They will underestimate. Negative, I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. And then here we are today.
Well, and you. So I've been listening to the podcast. I mean, you know, before I climb my way into the ranks as co-host.
I made him join the, he didn't really have an option actually. Anyway.
Well, I mean, I listened for a while and that's actually how I got to know you. And you always present yourself as like a noob or a learner, but you've also been practicing for a long, long time and you got a big history, of stuff that you know, and I feel like the listeners should probably know about that too.
Yeah, you know, I think we have some weird parallels. So like I had the typical middle of Nebraska church upbringing, just generic Christian church. We later become more in the label of Lutheran, which was still just, it's a generic Protestant church for the most part. It wasn't real radical on beliefs or anything. So yeah, I mean, I was involved in like, oh, they'd have kind of youth groups on weekend events, stuff like that. When I was a teen, I went to church camp, which I ended up later working at church camp. I liked working in the kitchen most, but what I really liked about that church camp is we would have bonfires, we would have sing-alongs, and the sing-alongs weren't necessarily a particular religious set of songs. They just had some really good upbeat, positive songs that the kids would sing and everything. And that felt more spiritual to me than Christian church ever did. And sitting in a pew and singing these really drudgy hymns and everything that didn't feel like praise. It was just strange. So it never clicked with me that way. And on the side thing is anytime I would see a TV show or a movie or anything that involved any kind of witchcraft or magic, I would be really fascinated, like probably more so than any of my friends ever were. And I always felt a connection to that, but it was always, oh, well, that's sinful, blah, blah, blah. And then I would have these broad concepts as a young kid, and my mom would try to stifle them, so I just wouldn't talk about them, which I don't really want to get into because that's kind of like a whole philosophy concept. But I would just kind of have a more broad term on God and stuff. And, oh, no, you can't. This is how we believe. You can't believe that way. And it was kind of how it was presented to me. No, no, this is, we go to church and this is how we believe. So it was like, oh, okay, well, I guess we don't do that. So gut feeling in me just wanted to explore more beyond those boundaries of what church presented. And you can believe in angels, but you can't speak to angels because speaking to angels is a sin. And that's how that was presented in my mom's whole realm of upbringing and the churches we went to. Oh, well, angels help us, but you can't talk to them. You can only pray to God. And then like at some point in time, I did absorb the Bible scripture that Christ said, pray in private. So it clicked in my head. Why are we doing all these like mass gatherings of people you don't even know and praying as a group and stuff with someone in the front? We're supposed to make that a private thing. And that's how that always felt to me. So I had a lot of conflict there. And then my mom had some mental illness and stuff going on. And she was chronically, chronically depressed and had problems. So church just didn't click for me. And I had anger going on because of those, the conflicts that were presented to me versus how I felt. I would get angry, probably much like you were angry, but for different reasons. And one day I was working in a factory and this guy that worked in the factory came in the break room. I was having my lunch and he started talking about a book he was reading on manifestation, which I didn't even know what the word meant. But it perked my ears up. I'm like, what? Wait, what's that? And he goes, oh, well, it's using energies to, you know, change your reality. And so I started, I don't even remember what book he recommended. He recommended a book. I went and found the book. And in finding that, it was in a New Age section of like Walden Books or one of those popular stores back in the day. Of course, there's witchcraft stuff, Wicca stuff going on. I would find those other books. And then I was like, whoa, what is this stuff? So I started reading Wicca stuff that was probably geared more towards teenagers, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's what was in the bookstores and available. And then I would find local bookstores would have Wicca 101 classes and stuff. And a lot of adults about in my age range were taking these classes. So I ended up taking a couple of those. I ended up getting more books. Wicca was good. I absorbed it, but it didn't work for me. It's a religion, essentially. It's a nice religion and it involves magic, but I took the magic portions from it. And what didn't work for me was like you would find a spell book, but it's all someone else's spells. And if the logic in those spells don't make sense, it doesn't work for you. So a lot of that didn't work. But when I would try stuff like candle magic, I would get results. I took a candle magic class. I kind of didn't follow anything for a while, but I always practiced candle magic. I would pour myself into a small tea light with a candle magic technique. I still use it to this day. And then there was a period of time I went back to church and I was going to a more of a contemporary church for a couple of years. And it was a lot of fun. I really liked it. And they presented scripture in a real positive way. But all of a sudden, it started not working. And even through all of that time, I still had my cauldron. I still had my tarot cards. I still had my candle magic that I would do. And I never let go. I could not let go of that. And it just kind of stayed hidden in a box. And I would bring it out when I needed to. Kind of went back to candle magic and those little real basic philosophies. And much like you said, Bart Ehrman, I had a conversation with somebody and I was like, you know, the problem with scripture is it's presented from a religious standpoint. I would like to find scripture presented by a historian that has no religious agenda to the knowledge presented. I started doing online searches and I found Bart, started buying some used books off of Amazon. And at that moment is when I found Baal Kedmon for some reason. I don't know how that worked, but it led me to Gallery of Magic books. And I dove into that super hard. I'd had some witchcraft books and stuff through the years where I'd pick up philosophies, but really, as soon as I found Bart Ehrman for a historic presentation of biblical scripture, that's when I actually found occult magic. And right in that same time frame, I found Psalms magic with hoodoo. And it's the hoodoo reference I use today. I shared it with you recently, but that Psalms magic worked. Oh my gosh, it worked. So yeah, I found Baal Kedmon's books, and he was actually my first occult author, although I didn't buy any of his books. I think I had Kindle Unlimited and downloaded probably three or so of his books. And when I was reading some of the reviews, there was a review on there where somebody mentioned Gallery of Magic. And I was like, what is this person referring to? What does this mean? And the review, it had like some content to it of some sort. There was like it was an actual intelligent review. So I looked up Gallery of Magic, and that's when I found the Gallery of Magic books. And then those were the Servitor book was my very first magic book that I purchased, as well as Words of Power. And I worked with those. That was my first like real interaction with angel work. And as I went with some of this occult type magic and the Gallery of Magic, I still peppered in a little bit of witch concepts, and I've never let go of some real simple candle magic that I've done that's been highly effective. I layer it with, well, sometimes it's hard to get the herbs and stuff for root work, right? So I use essential oils. It's the essence of the plants. And that is like holy cow effective when you combine it with candle magic. So I never let go of that. And then I would twist things to work with my head. And then I found out, oh, that's chaos magic. So I've always been one that's been mixing stuff up anyway with stuff that already works for me. And then I learn something new. And then I kind of connect dots with what works. It gets me curious about what I don't understand. I dig deeper. I try to find more references. And then I just try to pay attention to what I'm reading. I follow it. And then sometimes I just tweak it, my own psyche. I've never had anything not work. My little strange way of thinking, I always go into it expecting it to work and I get results. I'm pretty good with energies. And now I've just got this mishmash of, here again, it's chaos magic. I have a good sense about it. I don't know why, but I have a good sense about it. Turns out I'm claircognizant. So...
That's essentially how I think magic should work anyways, where you're tweaking stuff so that it makes sense for you, because that's really what matters at the end of the day. And, you know, we have a tendency to venerate things that are historical purely because they're old, which I don't really consider like a valid reason for venerating them, because what it is it's an account of what worked for those people at that time in that culture. I mean, it's pretty darn specific. And
you know, it goes back to the Wicca books that I found and the spell books. Sometimes it was so exciting and so cool because someone had, it was a book. Oh my gosh, it's a book. It has to be real. You know, we have that mentality. And it would have stuff you've never explored in it. But at the same time, at the end of the day, it's somebody else's magic. And it's what worked for their psyche. They could have been totally left-brained and you're right-brained, you know? So tailor it. And then at the same time, I take the Gallery of Magic books have a lot of good, people tend to skip over the beginning that has all of the explanation in it. And that's where there's a lot of delivery of amazing, amazing occult knowledge. And people don't take it. They go straight to the little rituals or the sigils or whatever's going on with that book. And they don't read the first couple chapters on how everything works, the tips, the tricks, the advice is given. And that is where some of the juice is. that you can use for anything a lot of times.
It feels maybe like you're not reading a super magical text, but you are. You're reading a super magical text that's been boiled down and presented using today's language instead of archaic language, which is okay. Those books that were written 700 years ago were written in contemporary language. 5,000 years ago were written in contemporary language.
Yeah, so, well, another thing that people don't connect the dots on is that if you go to, well, here's two primary books, 72 Angels of Magic and Demons of Magic. Every one of those spirits in those books has a psalm attached to it that you summon them with. And that goes back to the hoodoo witchcraft use of psalms magic and how psalms magic was first introduced to me. This is knowledge that's passed around in different paths of magic and paths of practice. It's the same stuff. It's just how it's approached. So what's absolute for one practice obviously isn't the only absolute, because other cultures are using the same things for the same purpose and they go about it totally different. So,
right.
You know,
so in the end, like, don't judge your faith by your neighbors. They got their own path up the mountain. You got your own path up the mountain. Just keep your eyes in front of your own 2 feet and see what's next. I mean, that is probably the best practical advice I could give to any seeker.
Oh, yeah. And then what I find is the more I take the hardcore rules off and, you know, I'll think about stuff. I use my guardian angel a lot. I think about stuff and I ask. And that's another part of my story I left out. This is weird. There was somebody 11 years ago, and this person had a book in his home that somebody had given him, but he didn't read it. It was just sitting there. It was a nice book on angels. And I was bored one time and he was watching something on TV that I wasn't interested in. And I picked up that book on angels and it turned out to be different accounts of people that had weird things that had happened in times of peril, times of emergency, and unexplained individuals that helped them in the moment, grabbed them out of a situation, and then they just weren't there anymore. I mean, just like really weird counts of angel help. And it was a really cool book. I think I still have it. I'm going to have to go find it. It may be in a box somewhere in the basement. But at any rate, my mom was always completely, completely crazy about angels. And I did an episode about her back in December called For Aunt Dolores. And her whole thing was she always wanted to have angels around her. She collected little angels. She had angel references. She loved them, but it was off limits to talk to. And I always felt so bad that she was so scared to talk to someone who was probably just standing there going, "We're right here. We're right here." And so for her deep interest in it, I picked up this book off of his bookshelf and I was reading it and it was really interesting. Well, he didn't work out as things tend not to in, you know, relationships. And you go through a lonely time, even when things don't work and you want out of a situation, there's an aftermath of a breakup. And that book was in my head. And I remember just doing candle magic and hollering out and saying, you know, I don't know how this works. If there's a God or whatever, I want to be able to talk to my dogs. I want to be able to understand things. And I feel so lonely, but I don't want people in my space. How does the angel thing work? Can they keep me company? How do I communicate with them? Can they help me with my animals? And I was kind of in a really low place and I just really never got much response. And I never felt a whole lot in that time. But it wasn't all that much later that I ended up finding this trail of breadcrumbs that led me to the Gallery of Magic working with angels books. And everything from the time that I did that work brought me up to here. I mean, literally, even though that I didn't think I was heard for probably a couple of years and I just kind of dismissed it, all of a sudden I started finding stuff. So, I mean, you really are heard. And one of the things that people don't understand about magic is it's too simple. It has to be hard, you know? And the biggest thing is you have to ask and you have to project with emotion. And that's the basic for any of it. That's the basic concept for any of it.
Here's one of the big dirty secrets is if you feel you're being blocked, chances are it's probably you doing the blocking.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to make it too complicated. Like angels, like they're not dumb. They're actually super, super smart, and they want to give you what you expect. So if you think, like, let's take, for example, the Abramelene ritual for contacting your holy guardian angel. You need to spend a year in a cabin with a servant under the age of 10 who can anoint you hourly. I mean, it's crazy, right? No one, aside from a couple of billionaires, could even pull it off, A. And B, it's just totally impractical. That's an example of an individual feeling like this task is monumental. So it must take monumental effort to happen. And the angels go, okay, well, then here's the monumental effort you can put into having it happen. There you go. And he writes down a book and everybody goes, yes, that's the way. Well, it can be a way, but it's a stupid way.
I don't even perceive stuff like that as being a method because it seems like a smokescreen to control people. If people knew they could contact their guardian angel for help, which then helps you contact other angels, literally, they're your own personal concierge in this life.
Mm-hmm.
It and makes it an impossibility so that you rely on others for your spiritual needs. And when you rely on others, it takes your own personal power away. It's a personal control thing.
Yeah, that's a big old red flag. Anytime you get approached by somebody who is trying to tell you that it's kind of their way or the highway, man, run as fast as you can, because that is a scam.
And that goes to church and everything. If it's, you can't contact God without doing this, you can't do it on your own without this strict set of rules, it makes it lofty, it makes it hard in some way, it takes your personal power away. Everybody has a spark of the divine in them, and everyone has the right to structure their life how they want and access those guides and those angels that are on standby. We are spirits in meat suits. We need navigators. That's what they're there for. They're there to help.
And God, you know, God gave you the divine spark. God loves you in that way. You don't need an intercessor to talk to the divine. You don't need an intercessor for anything, really, because there is a part of you that is God.
Yeah, it's that spark of life that nobody understands. Yeah.
Like once you recognize that, all the books are obsolete.
Yeah.
And it's you're on your own adventure. And gosh, I wish I could encourage everyone to just jump right to that point.
Well, you know, I was thinking about something recently, and I'll try not to get too deep into this because everyone has their own opinions. But, you know, why don't we get everyone on board with angel magic or doing their own thing or whatever? Why do these stifling religions that, you know, take your personal power away, this and that? Well, first off, we've got so many people on Earth. Some people aren't responsible enough in certain points in their life. Maybe it changes, maybe it doesn't, that they either couldn't understand this kind of spiritual freedom, or maybe their psyche is that which needs those boundaries to feel safe. Okay, that could be it. And it's also basically a population control. And then I thought, well, that seems kind of like a real absolute way of thinking. And I wasn't real comfortable with that. And I thought, well, that seems like I'm limiting myself somehow. But then I thought, part of it is seek and you shall find. You've got to want to really find that connection to the divine to the point you want to break out of those boundaries. You have to have the curiosity about you to look into it and search and find your path, whatever that is, whether it's witchcraft or hoodoo or occult magic or very ceremonial magic or chaos, whatever your path is. If you're stuck in church or something and you feel that need, that's where your path is at that point. And when you're ready to ascend and evolve, the curiosity starts pecking at you, and that's when you start finding stuff like this. So I think it's everyone's on their own timeline too. Some of it is the scavenger hunt of finding it, and the thrill of when you do find it too. It's different when you do it that way.
Yeah, I would compare it, you know, or give it the analogy of, let's say you're a little kid in like a one church, one bar town. You got a main strip where everything happens. Everyone goes there. It's the place to be. Societally, you are expected to go there. But you're there so often that you kind of take it for granted and you don't really understand what's happening, which I think is where a lot of people are at with mainstream religions, is it's so familiar that it's easy to go through the motions and never dig beyond. But at some point, curiosity gets you. And if you're a little kid on that main street and you decide to wander off into a ravine and see where it goes and, you know, chase a little stream up a couple miles, that's magical.
Yeah.
Like, that experience, you're going to find all sorts of crazy crap. You're going to find like fish you never seen before, cool plants, like little lizards and stuff. I mean, that's where the fun is, right? And when you're a little kid, you know that. You get off the main road. You check out those ravines and rivers. When you get older, you think, well, everyone's on the road. That must be the way. But maybe that's not your way.
Yeah.
Maybe your way up the mountain is a couple miles east. You got to go looking for it.
You know? Yeah. You know, and even that analogy goes back to why I always say you have to be in touch with your childlike self when you practice magic, because it's the way to let go of those boundaries, and it's the way to want to explore. And it taps into a area of your brain that really sees things in a different way, I think. And that's very useful to your magic, because then when you put too many boundaries on yourself, that's where your blockages go. You know, it turns into a block. You have a oh, that can't do that. No. Yeah, you can't.
I mean, one project I'm working on right now is I'm working with some angels to teach me how to experience love, because I have, as we all do, very societally ingrained ideas of what love is. I mean, you know, I have a wife, I have kids. I understand it from that perspective, but there's another kind of love that is separate from your family, separate from your friends. That is that universal kind of love. I'm trying to tap into that. I'm trying to feel what that feels like. And I'm not going to lie, it is a difficult feeling to wrestle with.
Sometimes I know one thing I've been struggling with, and it's one reason I like putting an emphasis on the shadow work, is when you're doing an experiment like that, or you're somebody that's trying to do a love spell, or you're trying to find a significant other and you keep being blocked. If you don't feel like you are worthy of love, you are going to have a lot of problems. Everyone always says, well, you have to love yourself before you can love others. That's great and everything, and that holds true. But you also have to be worthy of love in your own head. And that can be hard. If you don't think you're worthy of receiving, that's a different story. One thing I talk about my little crazy budgie all the time. They differ from dogs or cats in the fact that, like with a dog or cat, you can still kind of manipulate it. You can train them. You can do stuff like that. Certain birds, you have to allow them to be. And once they start connecting with you, which could be immediately or take months, the connection is unlike anything I've ever experienced with another animal. And you have to be completely willing to not control that animal. I mean, you have to control its water and its food and its safety and things like that. But as far as its personality and what it does, the less you control it, the more it loves you. And then the more it wants to interact with you and learn from you. And then you can do training and stuff with it. But the bond that it has is crazy. I've never experienced it with another animal.
Hmm. So that goes to show you that you should lean into wherever you find the divine most readily. It's obvious to me that for you, you find it in animals.
Mm-hmm.
I find it in music. And if you'd permit me, I've got a couple of messages that actually channeled messages that would be very fitting what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Are these something that you did recently?
Yeah. So I've got one from Citri and one from my guardian angel. So the one from Citri is interesting because I was talking about, I was asking them. Citri's kind of androgynous. I don't. I was asking them about what rituals should I employ to work on my business. Citri says, quote, "You don't need the rituals. Throw them away. You are a musician. You are strongest when in an act of creation. You make beauty out of nothing. Is that not divine? So learn the concepts, learn the framework, and then improvise, dance, and sing with the universe. For joy, purpose, freedom, all of it is yours, but you must seize it." And then my guardian angel says, "The board has been set up in your favor. You have only to play. If you are confused about which way to go, it's simple. Follow your joy." And those are some pretty short messages, but there's a lot of wisdom there.
That is awesome. And you know what? So Tim and I really didn't start becoming friends, I'd say actively, till September-ish last year timeframe. And then we started really talking more in the October timeframe. Back then, both of us were really kind of like, well, we can't channel messages. But then we started really having conversations between ourselves, and not on Facebook and not on email. Like, we would pick up the phone and talk, and we would start saying stuff to each other. It's like, Tim, you're channeling messages. And then I would be in a similar situation weeks later, and you would be like, well, you're channeling messages too, you know? And then we've just really encouraged each other. And that goes back to what I was saying, like with the Oracle Card Challenge, learning tarot. Get yourself somebody that you jive with really well and work together on a common goal. Since Taylor was on the podcast, Tim and Taylor have become friends, and they've found that they've have a lot of magic that aligns up, and they coach each other and cheer each other on with that. So it's really cool to network, to really build your spiritual path and learn as far as trying stuff too, you know. And when it comes to each other's skills, you start recognizing each other's skills, like you're channeling. Like, you never even thought you were channeling stuff until we started really pointing it out in each other's conversations.
Well, I thought I had to go to a channel or an oracle or somebody if I wanted to have direct communication. I thought I, you know, needed an intercessor because I wasn't good enough. And so for a long time, I paid for those services. And then after our conversations, you're like, no, you're channeling, man. Like, lean into it.
Actually, what I told you to do is stop fucking spending money on shit you didn't need to spend money on when you can do it yourself just as well, is what I think I said. Yeah, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but yeah. Right.
I mean, it's not like musicians have a lot of money to begin with. So, but I started doing it and I found that it came so easily once I just decided that, yes, I have the divine authority to talk to these spirits like anybody else. Of course I do. And once I knew it in my bones, as a matter of fact thing, they started chitter chattering.
You start getting all kinds of messages. And sometimes you people, like, what I would like to do is like use this as a teaser, because Tim and I have been talking about all the things that we can use this podcast to teach people about, and then where to find more information so that you can follow up and try stuff on your own. You don't have to take our word for stuff, but we really want everyone to succeed, because we're seeing a lot of ripoff scams out there. We're seeing a lot of people with low confidence levels, and everyone can do this. And even since we started talking, and we had other people we've talked to individually and on group stuff in the past, whatever, we started realizing a lot of the people out there that people, you know, oh, that's an authority on this. Oh, this person's highly knowledgeable. They started out exactly like us. They started just trying stuff, and they were doubting themselves the whole time. They didn't even feel like they were magicians half the time. Some of them wrote books. Some of them came up with concepts. And it was very real stuff. So really, you can support people. But I think the best way to support people is if you're going to buy a video course, get one that you have lifetime access to. So like Bal Kadmon has them, you always have access to. There's video courses where you have to be there at a certain time, certain place. You don't have access to it, or you pay an exorbitant amount of money and there's a limitation on it, stuff like that. Get something where you always have access to that course, or books are good. I've almost done no courses at all. I don't think they're necessary. The things I've learned in books have springboarded me to learn on my own. But we really want to...
That's been my finding too. I mean, I haven't taken a bunch of courses online.
Yeah, it's social. Do your research on who's teaching it. Bal Kadmon has put years of research into his courses. Nineveh, he has put years of his experience into his courses. His are more of a presentation of what he's learned and what he's found to be his truth. And sometimes there's a good value in that, but really, you're going to learn the most by just flying and stretching your wings. And I think I want to use this episode, and we'll conclude here pretty quick, and springboard into how to arm yourself with information. We're going to tell you stuff that we've been learning and digging really, really intensely into that people seem to think that they can't do. And it's some of the easiest magic out there and some of the most effective. So
I think we should also, we seem to be hammering on this a lot lately, but it's such a prevalent issue in the community. Is a couple of fraud alerts.
Yes, we're going to have another episode following up because we've had some feedback, and you even found some in your area where you live. We discovered one together today through the help of a listener. Yay, Evelyn! And it's out there, and we didn't realize how bad it was.
Yeah, so briefly, the fraud alert that I'll give you today is... There is a woman up in the northern Midwest who is offering psychic readings at a normal rate, and then during the reading is convincing folks that they have a parasite or a demon attachment or blah, 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 blah.
A parasitic entity attachment!
And the only way to get rid of this entity is to buy a candle from them that they have ritually prepared for you for the low, low price of $1,000.
Wow.
And
that's insane.
One woman said she took the candle and looked on the bottom, and there was still a price tag on the bottom from Goodwill for
$2. Oh my gosh.
Okay. So this is like, I mean, it's blatant, and this woman is obviously not the sharpest tack in the tray. but so she got caught doing this, and turns out she had defrauded people for about $250,000.
Wow.
$1,000 at a time through bogus psychic hoopla. So I mean, you got to be weary.
And that's a common one. The whole demon attachment and the parasite. That's a common one. I've talked about that before. Well, you know, Tom Alipas wrote in, and we were talking about it when Tom Alipas wrote in. Tom Alipas wrote in again. So we're going to feature that when we follow up on the fraud, because we've got a few more that we've discovered that I want to arm people, because what's happening is they put a dependency on you for their magic and their knowledge. And it devalues you. And then you believe it, and they tell you bullshit. And it just perpetuates stuff. And then you're going to lose faith in your own spiritual path eventually, because you're not going to have any trust in anyone. So we don't want that to happen.
Right, because you should trust yourself first and foremost. You are the best authority on you. And that actually leads into my other fraud alert, which was something that my mom brought to me and said, hey, there's a friend of your aunt who has a woman living with her, squatting with her, rent free, so that she can help clear this woman's karmic debt. And she's gone so far as to actually start like emotionally abusing this woman saying things like, well, you're so messed up. I can't wait until I can clear your karmic debt and be out of here because good Lord.
Wow.
And it's a weird situation, but here's the crazy thing, folks. This quote unquote psychic has been living at this woman's house for 2 years under the guise of her living there to help her clean her karmic debt. Whoa.
That is crazy. That is crazy. So we will continue this, and let's bring this up next time and do a part, you know, a follow-up on some chit-chat on this, but let's do a takeaway. So first off, 2 years to have someone live in your home or anything ridiculous thereof. I mean, you can do the work yourself. I don't care what the work is. You can do it yourself. You will never be given a burden too great for you to bear. Seriously, you've got the strength in you. You've got the knowledge in you. You've got the ability in you. Sometimes you got to practice. You have to practice, though.
You have the divine spark in you. That's all you need. Like, you don't need other people. You got it.
And you just got to practice and find what works and find what rocks your world. But then part two that people don't get, and it's so simple, it's painful. If somebody approaches you trying to sell you a reading, trying to sell you magic that you didn't go to them for, and they're telling you, hey, I had a vibe off of your profile picture. I just had a feeling. That's a common one. Evelyn had that one happen. We're going to talk about that next time because that was me and Tim's, oh my gosh, today. And then what was the other one? If you mentioned it just a little bit ago, we've seen this before. Tom Alipas brought this up when he wrote in. You have someone, you go to the, I want a card reading. It sounds innocent enough. You get a card reading, a palm reading, whatever. And then all of a sudden, oh, well, there's these problems and I can help you with that. Where can I send your invoice? Like, if they start selling you stuff that you did not ask for, that's a red flag. I don't care what it is or how it's presented. If you only went there for a happy reading or happy channeling or something to get a question answered, more sales occur. Say no. Just say no. And then if it's somebody that you purchased magic from, the magic doesn't work, suddenly it's your fault because you doubted it. You have blockages. They have to sell you more magic for the blockages. Just say no. You don't need it. We'll tell you what books to buy. Hang with us. We'll get you on the right path. Stop spending your money.
Yeah, and do it yourself.
There's no need for that. You will get more messed up and more codependent problems and doubt yourself than you can even fathom. So just don't even go down that spiral. It's not worth it. Magic should be fun and it should be empowering and it should be all about you and improving your life and your family and those around you and your close circles.
Yep. And I think you'll find that if you're using it for purposes other than that,
you're not going to be happy.
It probably isn't going to work well.
It brings you down too. It makes you angry. It makes you, the energy flow is wrong in your life. So when things are going good, it just keeps getting better. It perpetuates more positive and it works.
Yeah. I mean, I think the takeaway is
you can do it.
Don't use magic to change the world around you. Use magic to change yourself so that you're more a person that the world wants to be kind to.
Yeah. You can use it to change your world around you too and bring stuff to you. But if you don't change yourself first, you're going to have those energy blockages. And that's why we're doing the Oracle Card Challenge and the Shadow Work Challenge, is to empower all of you guys so that you're going to have a successful, magical path the rest of your lives. So I guess with that said,
we should probably say, keep a smile on your face, keep a bounce in your step,
keep practicing your magic. And stick that money back in your wallet, back in your pocket. Take your wife to lunch. Take your husband to lunch. Take your kids to the park. Don't spend it on somebody you've never met that's bringing you down. You got it in yourself. With that said, bye-bye.
Oh, yeah.
We are such dorks, man. if they keep coming back and listening to us. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for sticking around after the show. Oh my gosh, so many changes and so many things to tell all of you about. We are officially in rerun mode. What does that mean for you? Well, hey, if you listen on your favorite podcast app, nothing is going to change. You will always be able to go back and listen to your favorite episodes and guest spots anytime you want, just as you always have. Again, nothing will change for those of you that use your favorite podcast app. Next, the website will change a little bit. It will change to www.podpage.com/random-illusions, or you can listen directly off the host site, www.randomillusions.buzzsprout.com. Links are now in every episode show notes. Check it out. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/GOST Radio. twitter.com/GOST Radio. If you love YouTube, don't forget to subscribe to the Random Illusions Podcast YouTube channel, the GOST Radio YouTube channel, and TikTok. Don't forget to follow us there. Links are down in the show notes. Exclusively for the listener base of Random Illusions, Tim and I are going to continue our coffee.com divinations. Just let us know if you want a rune reading by Tim or a tarot reading by Shasta and what your question is. Give us about 2 business days and we will respond with a thorough answer to your question, giving you some insight and maybe a little inspiration as well. If you would like to follow Tim and I as we jump into our new leadership roles and all of the new projects we are presenting and working on, don't forget to hit us up. Facebook, privately, Tim Cheesebrow, Shasta Michaels, Random Illusions, or just shoot us an email at magic, M-A-G-I-C-K, at randomillusions.com, and we will send you links as to where you can keep tabs on all of our future endeavors and adventures. And hey, you may want to get involved yourself. You never know. All right, keep your eyes and ears peeled. We will be announcing when we will be back. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.